Welcome, change agents. I am so glad that you're here. This is Cheryl Klein, and you're listening to the Fearless Female Leadership Podcast. So today is an incredibly special day. It's such an honor to have you with us, Tiffany Bova. Congratulations on your incredible book that's out and all of the amazing things that you have been up to. Thank you so much for taking time to be on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Cheryl. I'm thrilled to, we were finally able to make this happen.
I know. And we were both speaking. I know you were super busy when we were both speaking at Women of the Channel in New York, and I'm glad we finally got to connect. And so before we get into talking about the book, The Experience Mindset, but also just why these concepts are so, so very important, I thought I would ask a little bit about you. You know, I haven't known you that long, and it seems like you've always been successful, but could you let us know, you know, what inspired you? You know, was it a direct path, you know, to success, or what inspired you to greatness, or what was difficult that inspired you to overcome? And, you know, can you tell us a little bit about that and about your journey?
Sure. You know, when I get asked this question, I always try to figure out what's the best way to answer that in a way that isn't like I just keep going on and on and on. So I would say this. I would say sports at a very young age taught me a lot about winning with grace, losing with your head held high, being coachable, working on a team, knowing your role, like all of those things, I think is really huge skills that if learned really young, you start to accidentally apply them in your adult life, if you will, when it comes to work, because your manager is kind of like your coach. You know, your peers are sort of like your teammates. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some. And sometimes you get asked to play a position that isn't really what you want to do, but you do it for the betterment of the team. Or you get asked to do something and you're really scared to try and do it because you're not sure you have the capability or skill set to do it. But you try it anyway because you trust that, well, I have at least the bases covered, right? And I'm going to go and I've got my teammates around me and my coach, right? In this case, your manager, and they will help me through it. I mean, in theory, right? That sort of, I think, was really the strong foundation for me to build upon. And it really allowed me when I got into the business world to understand that I was pretty good at something, i.e. selling. I really enjoyed technology, and that was kind of my entry point. And I didn't know where it was going to take me, but I was always like, put me in, coach, right? Kind of wherever you want me to be, and I'll figure it out along the way. And even if I didn't have a manager who really played that role of a coach, and maybe the rest of my peers were not great teammates, it still fostered an environment for me to grow. So you know, I appreciate that it from the outside, it might look like it's always been success, but there were a lot of linear moves, lateral moves, moves down, moves up. I changed jobs quite frequently in my 30s. But I will tell you that once you find sort of your superpower or what really excites you, then you can start to make huge investments in yourself on how do you get better at that? And how do you continue to stay curious in that? And how do you amplify that within your network and get support from those around you who may not be your boss, may not be on your team, but ultimately see more in you than you do in yourself? And I think that that's always been my philosophy, and it's served me well. Doesn't always work. But if it works more than it doesn't, then you'll keep sort of moving forward over time.
Yeah. And that sounds, I love that you brought that up, because it seems, or what I'm hearing is that, you know, being agile when you're younger, because it, you know, I've heard, this isn't the first time that I've heard, but I'm glad you put a, you know, an exclamation on that. Sometimes people see things in you that you might not even see in yourself, and you might not think that you're ready or capable or anything in it. And it sounds like you jumped at those things and you were not afraid to jump in and listen and at least try it out.
Yeah. And I will tell you, in my 30s, I changed jobs every 18 months, and I was actually considered a higher risk at that time. And it wasn't because I was hard to manage or because I was a difficult employee, but it was really because I wanted more for myself, and I wanted to take a risk. And if they weren't, whomever they was, right, my employer wasn't willing to take a risk on me, then I had to take a risk and bet on myself. And so I would change jobs to get those things for what I was trying to accomplish. And so, you know, changing jobs while frequent, and many around me would sort of joke, you know, it's been a year. Are you still at the same place? And it kind of like it was a bad thing, but it was really that I believed that I could add more value and I had more to give, and maybe I wanted to learn more. And if someone didn't see that in me or wasn't willing to go to bat for me or didn't think it was there was an opportunity, then I had to make the hard decision to do it for myself.
Mm-hmm. So you not only then like listen to someone who said, hey, Tiffany, I think you should try this out, or you could be amazing in this. Sounds like you were pretty proactive in the process, to be honest.
I was super proactive because I would get bored fairly easily. I think it was really just the nature of the beast of sort of who I am. And I want to be challenged, and I want to be inspired. I want to stay curious. I want to learn all the time. I want to try new things. And if it doesn't work, what's the worst thing that could happen? I always say, as long as it's not illegal or unethical, like the worst thing that happens is you learn something and you move on. And so I think it was both things. But I, over time, worked hard on my confidence muscle, which is sort of a term I use all the time, that if you want to lean on a skill set you have and you haven't been working that skill set out, it's very hard to pull from it when you really need it. And so it's like going to the gym, right? You start with 2 pounds. You can't just pick up 50 pounds. You have to work your way to 50 pounds. And then when you need that 50 pounds, you can pick it up. And it's the same way for me, working on that confidence muscle over time doesn't happen overnight. And you'll get sore, but you got to keep going and keep trying. And then when it's time, right, if you say, nope, I'm going to jump or I'm going to try something new, my confidence was high enough that, well, what's the worst that could happen? But if I had started from scratch and go, you know, oh, I've only been a salesperson in technology for 6 months and I want to be a VP of sales next week, that's a little unrealistic, right? So there's, you could say that's maybe where I want to go, and you may go further. You may end up somewhere else, but, you know, having that plan and building your confidence over time goes a long way.
Yeah, 100%. And I love that question that you asked yourself, and I want everybody listening or reading or however you're consuming this to jot it down and have it somewhere. And that is, what is the worst thing that could happen if I try? Of course, that's ethical and legal. I like that disclaimer. But I think that's really an important question to ask ourselves before our head gets in the way of us maybe not throwing our hat into the arena.
Yeah. And I was given a piece of advice when I made my last career transition, which is fairly recent. I reached out to a dear friend whom I happen to always call whenever I'm at these forks in the road, Seth Godin. You may know who he is. He's an amazing human and a great author, and really just a special person in my life. But I reached out to him, and you know what he said to me? He said, do not be the manager you don't like to yourself. What I mean by that is, if you have a manager who's telling you, you can't do that, you're not good at it, or it's not right for you, we've all had those managers who maybe didn't support us. Don't be that person to yourself, like in your own head. So he was like, listen, Tiffany, don't keep yourself up at night being that manager, that terrible manager to yourself, like saying you can't do something or you're not good at doing something. Like, that's what those managers or those people in our lives that hold us back potentially from our own greatness or get us to question our own confidence or whatever the terminology you want to use. Like, you cannot be that person to yourself. There's enough of those people around you, unfortunately, that you have to really work hard to have your talk track be, why not? What's the worst that could happen? I'm going to give it a try. I feel comfortable and confident in myself. It's not always perfect, but if you start to have a talk track where you're being that really terrible manager to yourself or that terrible friend or that terrible coach or that terrible mentor to yourself, like, don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah. I think that is amazing advice by Seth Godin. Do not be that bad manager to yourself. I have. My book, Linchpin, and so many others, is falling apart because I've read it so much. So, what a great person to have on speed dial, 100%. So, now speaking of mindset, the title we're talking about is, of course, your amazing book, The Experience Mindset. And what do you mean by the experience mindset, and why is it so important?
Well, I was fortunate enough to work for Gartner a number of years back, and it was all the way back in 2008. I was part of a team that made the prediction that we believed customer experience was going to be the next battleground. We actually believed that chief marketing officers were going to spend more on technology than chief information officers. And when we said that back in 2008, everyone thought we were crazy. But the Microsoft, SAP, Oracle, and Salesforces of the world all went out and bought marketing technology companies to get their hands on that capability to try to capture more of the spend from the organizations they were already selling into. Why we believe that was because we believe that experience, online and offline, was going to become as important as the products and services that companies were selling. Now, once again, this is 2008, 9, 10, 11. We're in 2023. We're still talking about how important customer experience is. And so I've been sort of watching it and studying it and understanding and advising some of the largest companies in the world, as well as startups, on how to really lean into using experience as a competitive advantage. But my first book, Growth IQ, had 10 paths to growth, and the very first path was customer experience, right? True north is your customer, live and die on the hill of your customer, do whatever they ask you, right? It's the power of everything I was just saying. What I ignored almost completely in that first book was the employee experience, that in order to deliver these compelling and meaningful customer experiences, you have to have employees that are satisfied and engaged, willing to collaborate, go the extra mile, not only for customers, but for internal customers and teammates and peers. And it was a miss in Growth IQ. So the experience mindset was kind of the 11th path. It was more of a look, we have to have a mindset that if we are going to do something for the customer, let's not forget about the implications, either intended or unintended, to the employees who then serve those customers. So it was a mindset shift. This isn't about investing in new technology. This isn't about a new strategy. This is really about a new operating philosophy. And the mindset of if we do for one group, we need to make sure we don't negatively impact the other group, i.e., customer versus employee. And so I didn't want it to be anything more than that mindset shift and why it was important, how it would manifest itself, what the value of doing that was. And if you think of the themes of the two books, right, Growth IQ, kind of thinking, and Experience Mindset, kind of thinking, that I believed outthinking your competition is much better than trying to outspend or outcut costs or outhire or outdevelop. Like, you have to outthink. From that thinking comes all that great innovation and ability for you to differentiate the company. So I very much use those words intentionally, because I believe if you can get out of your own way of that sort of samism, or we tried it and it failed, it's not the way we do things here, that internal inertia will hold you back from greatness, both personally and as a business. And so going back to that talk track, right? Getting out of that talk track is really about reshaping and reframing your mindset.
And when I was reading, this is just seems like such a fresh idea that seems like it would be in front of everybody's faces that was just stumbled over and completely missed. And just thinking about as an employee, as a customer, it's such a new idea that just seems so intuitive, but I feel like not being lived into. And just time, it's just time, and so very important, especially in the economic environment that we're in.
Yeah, look, I'm not the first person to say happy employee leads to happy customer. You get that right, you get greater growth rates, right? Herb Kelleher, the former chairman and founder of Southwest Airlines, it could be Richard Branson. Really, everybody has said it. I'm not the first to say it, but You know, it was 2 years of research. Through that work, we are, if we're not the first, we're one of the first to actually prove causation and the direct correlation to which attributes and aspects of the employee experience have the greatest impact on the customer. So this is not all things employee, like compensation and equity and inclusion, all super important, super important. This is about the moment that matters when a customer and an employee have some kind of connection, online, offline, face-to-face, via Zoom, you know, opening a product, you know, a packaging, someone designed that package. Were they happy or not happy at their job? Did they make it easy or hard for the customer to open that package? They designed the website. They created the, you know, the script for the chatbot. You know, all that is touching a customer in some way, but and an employee did it. And so that connection between the two, I think, really made this unique. But treating an employee like an internal customer, I'd say that there are some companies, they call it different things, but they do understand the subtle difference between the two. But what I will tell you is the external customer wins almost every time. When push comes to shove and a decision has to be made, rarely is it made for the benefit of the employee. More so, it's made for the benefit of the customer. And that's where companies really have an opportunity that they could get so much more if they just said, look, it won't always be even, like that we do everything, you know, 50-50 for customer and employee. But right now it's so out of balance that if you just started making little improvements on the employee side with technology and tools and processes and training and siloed groups and that kind of stuff that an employee has to navigate every single day, which by the way, brings them zero joy. Wouldn't you rather have them focus on the things that are most important, not only to their customers, but actually make them happy at work?
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like it's a new look. Like you said, it's something that might already, you know, be out there, but also some tactical strategies of things that you companies can sink their, you know, their teeth into and implement real change rather than conceptually have an idea. So if you were to give the listener just one call to action or strategy or thing to think about moving forward, you know, what might that be?
So I have three. Never
okay, won. You're an overachiever. That's okay.
Yep. So one is take an inventory of what metrics you're currently using for customer and see if you have a correlating one for employee. So something like a net promoter score, customer satisfaction score. Are you doing an employee net promoter score or an employee satisfaction score? That's pretty easy, right? Just map out what you're doing. Second would be if you journey map your customer and what they do with you in order to buy something, right? Or open and close a ticket or call the call center, whatever it might be. Also journey map what the employee has to do in order to satisfy what it is the customer is doing. And you might find that there is a gap between you ask the customer to do one thing and underneath that, the employee has to do six things, right? So that will help you close a gap. The third thing I'd say is if you're surveying your customers, make sure you survey your employees. But if you survey your employees, I need you to action what you find out. What we found from the research is while the majority of companies actually survey their employees and ask them, how could we be better? And are you happy? And what, you know, what are areas that we could improve? That some 80%, a little more than 80%, don't know what to do or how to use that data to action change. So even though you're surveying, you're not doing anything with it. Now, if you're listening to this and you're like, look, I have a small team, you could survey your team, ask your team one question. And then if it's something you can fix, go get it fixed because it builds trust between you and the employee, right? If you are journey mapping, you start to see broken processes and lack of integration between systems. And if you have metrics, which we know drives behavior and all the metrics are customer focused, guess what happens? That's where everyone spends their time. So those are really the three because it's quick, right? Metrics, journey map, and then surveying.
Tiffany Bova, so much gold wisdom shared today. Thank you so much for your time. If you do not have Tiffany's books, The Experience Mindset, I highly recommend it. Tiffany, to your continued success, and I look forward to following your journey.
No, thank you again for having me, Cheryl.
If you've enjoyed this episode, follow or subscribe to the Fearless Female Leadership Podcast with Cheryl Klein on whatever podcast platform you use. We'll let you know every time we release a new episode. And if you really enjoyed what you've heard so far, rate and review us too. That's one of the best ways that you can support us and make sure that this podcast keeps going. I also offer a significant library of free mental toughness and high performance videos, worksheets, tips, and other helpful content on my website at www.cherylklein.com, including a Fearless Female Leadership checklist on how to prepare mentally and tactically for your next crucial conversation. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Cheryl Klein, and I look forward to having you back next time. And remember, you are only limited by what you think is possible. Cheering you on always.